So that is how the question of society came into the picture. This is not egoistic ethical hedonism, but which is called universal ethical hedonism. Not egoistic, but universal. You can see how Vyasa knew this doctrine earlier. As Arjuna himself says, what is this pleasure which is only for me? There are those people for whose sake I would like to enjoy and with whom I would like to share. If they are to be killed, what is my pleasure? So he is arguing ethical universal hedonism. And this is the argument which came in Europe much later in the 18th century. And as Vyasa has declared this doctrine long, long ago. And Arjuna is aware of this doctrine, and therefore he puts forward this doctrine. So as against periodic egoistic ethical hedonism, he puts the argument of universal ethical hedonism. He says, what is this? I am only trying to seek my own pleasure. No. A greater pleasure is when I share it with others. See, my faithfulness, the survival of my enemies is necessary, because only when I am victorious, I can enjoy with their company, where my pleasure is much greater. This is the doctrine in the West, as it is called, utilitarianism. Utilitarianism is a doctrine according to which you ought to seek the maximum pleasure of the maximum number of people. So when you want to do any action, you find out whether it is right or wrong by asking whether it will benefit the largest number of people and will give the largest amount of pleasure with the latest intensity, with the longest duration. This is what is called hedonistic calculus. You make a calculus which is hedonistic. You even apply this to political action. If you want to pass a law, how will you decide whether that law is the right law? You find out what will be the effect of the passage of a law by the parliament. If that law is going to promote maximum pleasure of maximum number of people, then that law is right. If not, then you should not pass that law. Now there is a third doctrine in the West, which has been defined and which has been refined and formulated powerfully by a philosopher called Immanuel Kant. Now he examined the human nature once again, and he said, it is not true that human beings seek their own pleasure. That's what he says. Psychologically, it's not true. What is it that human beings seek, if not the pleasure? The answer was that human beings even seek pain. It's not true that everybody seeks pleasure only. People also seek pain. They do not come out of the path of pain simply because that path will lead you to pain. Why? Because there is a greater demand in human beings. What is the demand? The demand to do the right action for the sake of being right. Human beings may produce unhappiness, trouble, difficulty, austerity. Human beings, according to him, have a motive to act only from the motive of doing the right action. And right action is not to be defined in terms of that which produces pleasure. Because people do right action even when pleasure is not obtained. Therefore it follows there is something other than pleasure. Rightness of action is something other than pleasure. In what then consists the rightness? If having pleasure, in what consists the right action? His answer was, a right action is that which you can will at the same time to be universal. Personal pleasure you can never make universal. Even maximum pleasure you cannot make universal. That which you can make universal, that is the right action. An action which you can at the same time will to be universal. For example, I should tell a lie. Supposing this is the doctrine, I should tell a lie. He said, this is a proposition. If it was a real ethical law, then you should be able to make it universal. Try to make it universal. I should tell a lie. If everybody knows that he is going to tell a lie, he said, there is profit in telling a lie. If this is a law, universal law, everybody knows it is a universal law, then is there any profit in telling a lie? The lie is useful only so long as it wears the garb of truth. Then only it can succeed, otherwise it can't succeed. Therefore, tell a lie cannot become a universal law. So he said, you find out those principles which you can make universal. That the truth is applicable to our whole world. Even if everybody knows that he is going to tell the truth, it will not destroy itself. So he argued that there is in the human being not a seeking of pleasure, but seeking the right itself which is universal. He said the human being is so constituted psychologically, he cannot help to discover a law which is universal and an impulsion to do that and that alone and nothing else. This is his famous doctrine of duty for duty's sake. Why do you perform a duty? Duty is a universal law which you obey. And why do you do it? Because it is going to give pleasure or pain or anything of the kind. Whether it gives pleasure or pain or anything, you do it because it is the right thing to do. It's a doctrine of duty for duty's sake. Now even this idea is present in the mind of Arjuna. He has come with that idea that justice should be established. Justice by why? Because it's justice. Not because it is going to give me happiness or happiness to others or anything of the kind. Justice is justice. Whatever may happen. So that argument is known, therefore, first of all he says, egoistic hedonism is to be thrown away. Then he says, even the universal ethical hedonism is to be thrown away for the sake of justice, for the what is called the idea of categorical imperative. Kant's theory is called the theory of categorical imperative. An imperative is a command, do this. Categorical means unconditional. not because they are going to get this result or that result, is categorical, for its own sake. So he says again, he argues that, yes, I know what is justice, and it is true I have come for justice. But now the more difficult question which arises, and that which takes Gita's teaching higher than that of Kant, that if that justice itself is going to produce injustice, if by doing this very just act I am going to kill all the people, and first of all slaughter itself is a wrong thing, because if everybody slaughters everybody else, then there is a question of doing anything in the world at all. It's not a universal law. Universality lies only in things in which you can protect, maintain everybody. So slaughter itself is unethical, first of all. It's not a universal law. So slaughter itself is sin. So to establish justice, if I have to make slaughter, then there itself is a dharma. So between these two, what have I to select? This dharma or that dharma? Kant was not aware that there are conflicts not only between adharma and dharma, there are conflicts even between dharma and dharma. And that is what makes Gita's teaching at a very high plane. And Arjuna says that this dharma I know, I would even fight in spite of all this. But when this slaughter itself is a sin, and further, that by doing this, a greater bastard progeny is going to be produced, in which dharma will not be resurrected at all, and there will be a reign of adharma. So doing itself, slaughter itself is a wrong action. It is going to produce a further wrong action because of the bastard progeny. In that condition, what is the solution? Therefore, Sri Aurobindo says, whenever you think at the ethical level, all your standards of conduct, right and wrong, depend upon the stage at which you have reached in your development. If you are at the lowest level, then hedonism is all right. At a higher level, universal hedonism is all right. At a higher, still higher level, categorical imperative is all right. But when one categorical imperative fights against another categorical imperative, then the solution is only spiritual. You have to transcend ethicality. At the ethical level, there is no answer. The conflict of ethics can be resolved only at the spiritual level. And that is why Sri Krishna entered into a spiritual answer to the question. Alright, so now next time we shall study the fourth chapter, which is the core of the teaching.